Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast.
Whoa.
Yeah,
I've gone for 2 weeks and you stole that from me. And welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my cutthroat, line-stealing co-host, Ben Bateman.
I couldn't help myself, man. I'm excited you're back. This is a big day.
You're getting used to me being gone. I see.
You were gone a lot. But I'll tell you what.
You're gone
a lot.
I'm
happy to have you back. There you go. I said it.
And today we are talking about many things, but mostly Guilds of Ravnica related. That name stresses me out. I almost say the wrong thing every time. I've been saying a lot of return to Ravnica, or just return to Ravnica. I've been using the hashtag more recently.
I think Guild's a pretty good set. I have to say, like, we talked about it on the set review, and as I've gone back through the list for multiple formats now, you think about the way Standard's going to look, Highland Roulette, Modern. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the cards. There's a lot of cards that I want to find ways to use.
Sure.
And
we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's the cards that are the obviously good cards. There's even cards that are like, I'll give you a good example of a card that, like, we're never going to play in Modern, I don't think. But I play in Highlander now because I think it's like kind of an interesting rate. Is the card Glow Spore Shaman? You don't even know what that is, right? It's green, black for a 3/1 that when it enters the battlefield, put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard and you may put a land card from them on top.
Yeah, we talked about it.
It's just like an interesting card where you're like, I could basically play a lower curve and set the top of my library with a land to hit my third land drop and still have 3 power on turn 2.
I mean, the thing is, in Modern, the cards that, like, there's the green and one, you do that, but you get to put the land in your hand, and that's just going to be a better card in Modern. But when you are in a singleton format where you want multiple of that effect, the more the merrier. And a 3/1 is a better.
So I'm saying you get 3 power rate. For 2 mana. Like, it's a cool way to be kind of proactive. But also, we've got our producer is pointing and alerting. It's a live show. What's going on, Mike?
I thought it was skipping. I think it might have been on my end.
Okay, great. So no glitches there. But anyway, so it's an exciting set, and I'm happy you're back to talk about it because there's a lot that's going on. So while you are sharing out links quickly, I'm going to just introduce.
I share links.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can I keep going?
Sure.
This is the Masters of Modern podcast. We talk about Modern here. We're going to be reviewing all the big decks from over the weekend from the Dallas SCG Open. There's some really cool new Modern results to talk about there. Alex is going to sing an a cappella song that he's prepared in his 2-week absence.
Ba, 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 Baran.
I made it
ba,
up.
Ba, 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 ba. You have to do the... a cappella can't be one.
Yeah.
That's like a solo. Ooh,
we got Jeff Roberts tweeting a cool list to you, he says in the chat.
Sweet. I'm Alex Kessler, and you can find me on Twitter at Kess Wiley.
And I'm Ben Bateman. You guys can find me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media.
And this podcast is at the MM Cast. And if right now, if you're watching the live stream, you can actually go submit a sweet deck list if you have one, because we'll be talking about sweet deck lists, and maybe we'll look at the one you guys send us on Twitter.
And also, we have a YouTube channel, which if you're watching this, you know that. Please subscribe, comment. If you're listening to this on audio and you want to help us continue to grow, guys, because that is what we're trying to do, is get bigger, more presence in the world for the Masters of Modern podcast.
Been eating a lot recently.
Yeah.
Gain some weight.
We're growing a lot. Go subscribe to us and find us on YouTube. It's youtube.com/c/the MMcast. That is the thing, and we have new stuff coming. So that is the intro. I suggest we get into the weekend results. Let's talk about SCG Dallas, the Modern Open.
Okay.
It was won by 4-color Death Shadow by Peter Holman.
Death Shadow's back.
Don't you feel like Death Shadow has kind of been the deck that's just like lingered for a year? It's like it had its 2 months in the sun at one point.
Remember when I was like, let's ban Death Shadow? I remember. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Bringing that meme back. I remember it as well.
This is like a combination. This is a combination of the Grixis Shadow lists that eventually replaced the Jund Shadow lists, and then those original Traverse Jund Shadow lists. It plays basically both things.
Yeah, it's just a combination of both things into one Uber Death Shadows list.
It's like, I'll play one copy of Gorklan Rampager in the deck, and I'll still keep my Traverse package.
I'm really excited about that Gorklan Rampager. That's a card that like hasn't shown up in Modern since it was in Standard, and now people are like, this card.
Remember there was a point when there was that Gruul all-in Modern deck for a second that played 4 of these?
It played 4 of those, 4 of your Burning Tree Emissary. Goyfs. And
it was powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it was really
like had
fast.
Turn 3 kills, right?
Like, yeah, it was like really,
that's,
really
that's
fast.
Basically become Goblin Bush or 8-whack, right?
Yes.
Like, Bushwhackers replaced Gorklan Rampager because you're just going wide is better than going tall.
Totally. So, yeah. So, I mean, this deck is pretty sweet. There's like nothing crazy here. It's got 2 copies of Assassin's Trophy in the sideboard, which is a newer card, obviously. But otherwise, this is just what we've come to
expect. Interesting, the board, which is fascinating. We'll talk about kind of winners and losers. Like, basically, the segments for today is going to be, we're going to talk about this tournament, we're going to talk about some sweet brew ideas, and then we're going to talk about winners and losers in from RGR.
Yeah, modern winners and losers, cards that have disappointed, cards that have been winners. We're going to go through each of those things. So
The big thing that's happened, and you can see it here, is that Dredge is back in a big way, and just Creeping Chill has made that deck so much more powerful.
The 2 and the 3 slot here at this SCG tournament, Ian Thorne and Alec Jones take 2nd and 3rd. Let's compare the list.
But even if you go to the top, like, 18, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Dredge decks.
Yeah. Yeah, 4 Creeping Chill in the 2nd place list, pretty much what
No, it's going to be pretty standard. I mean, messing around with Creeping Chill on Arena in Standard, which I know we don't want to talk too much about, but that card is what made that deck possible. It's like that in Arclight Phoenixes, where I'm just self-milling with that that blue enchantment that mills you when you cast blue spells. And you underestimate how much of a life swing 3 and then the 2nd one 6, you know, damage, and then you gain 6 life. So you're just so much farther ahead of them. And it's already a deck that's putting them on the back foot. So just free burn spells is really good.
Can burn beat a Creeping Chill Dredge deck anymore? Is it possible?
I mean, it's possible. You can always stumble. Seems like, I've definitely dredged and then got like 5 lands off of a Stinkweed Imp, and then like, oh, I have no way to do anything anymore. But yeah,
the math on your chances probably gets so much worse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it becomes much, 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 much worse.
Like, you probably just hemorrhage like 15%.
Right.
Just based on that one card. But yeah, these two lists look pretty similar. The sideboard is nothing too interesting. Yeah, but definitely very, very cool to see.
The other big news from this tournament, though, is like, there's a lot of returns here. Speaking of returns of Returns to Ravnica, Humans and Infect. Humans took 3 of the spots, and then Infect took number 8.
So, yeah, looking at these Humans lists, you know, again, we've seen a lot of consistency from these Humans lists for a while now. You know, this main deck here is not playing any copies of our Girl Knight of Autumn. Girl Knight of Autumn? Yeah, it's a female Knight of Autumn.
It's 3 females.
Three female knights. But it is playing 3 copies in the sideboard, and I think from what I have seen from the people that have been playing, it does look like that is a pretty standard play. You've got 2 copies of it in the sideboard over here in the 2nd list. Yeah, Tajik. Look at that. You seen this?
Yeah. I saw that Tajik is seeing some play in Humans. It's really good because it just turns off Lightning Bolt, or they have to bolt him and he's going to get damage in, and it makes your other threats bigger.
It's a new legendary creature. It's a human soldier from Guilds of Ravnica. White, red, 1 for a 3/2 haste with Mentor. Prevent all non-combat damage that would be dealt to other creatures you control, and you can give him first strike for Boros colors. That's pretty interesting. I didn't really register this card as like relevant to Humans.
If you're playing RG, like if you're playing the limited format, you realize that this is just an insane card in limited. Yeah. But Humans is basically a weird limited deck that's working, right? It's like it's a bunch of random dirtily 2 drops that like all are kind of fine, but then because they all just stop your opponent from doing anything, and then this guy lets you kind of do big swings into blockers that let you win the game, and he pumps one of your things to make him bigger.
Every single one of these lists was playing at least 2 copies of Night of Bottom of the sideboard. That's interesting. 8th place is Infect. Thomas Berry playing Infect.
0 Guilds of Ravnica. Just the metagame has lined up where Infect is good right now for whatever reason.
Yeah, this is like, we've seen
it probably has a, like, speaking of having a bad matchup against Dredge for Burn, I would guess that Infect actually is a pretty good matchup against them. They can't really block anything you're doing very easily, and you're more aggressive than they are.
Yeah, and this is a fast deck. Like, you know, this is the kind of deck where Humans can try to disrupt you, but if you can get around them one of their tricks once, you can just close the game out.
Right.
That's how fast this deck is.
Yeah.
I mean, you're obviously, like, your single copy of Spell Pierce here in the main is not very good, but if they, I don't know, like what's something they're going to do to you? So, like, if they look at your hand with a Kite Self Rebooter and they take one of your spells, but you've got one other... Like, you know what I mean? Like, you play such a density here. Like, you have such a density of threats. Like, your Rancor is really good against them. Yeah.
And, like, and one of your main ways of killing people is a flying land. What does Humans do against that? Like,
they have to try to block with Freebooter. I mean, that's, like,
right.
A more Mantis Rider, but that's too slow against you, probably. Mm-hmm. Maybe they get it down on turn 3. Like, yeah, I mean, this deck is going to get around their blocker or their piece of disruption, or it's not, and you'll get on the back foot. But what's cool about this deck is that as long as they're not killing you super fast, you can sculpt your hand and be like, okay, he's going to attack here, he's going to do this.
Right.
you know, that's so that's pretty cool. And I agree with you. Yeah, your flying land is the thing that really makes this deck great. So yeah, but zero copies of Gil's Ravnica cards.
And the last card that rounds out the top eight is Mono Green Tron.
Yeah, single copy of Mono Green Tron, which Tannen Grace was playing to a fourth place finish.
Actually, friend of the cast. I know Tannen. He's really nice. Yeah, hung out with him and Ruben at GP Atlanta. Awesome. And he's Ruben Bressler's like old roommate in Vegas or before Vegas, I forget. But yeah,
zero copies of cards from guilds in this deck in this set as well.
Just doesn't want to do anything new. Sticking to his guns.
Yep, old school. Yeah, but really good, really powerful. I mean, this is Mono Green Tron. It's funny how the way that these decks work. Like, you'll see one person adopt one thing, then the rest of the world adopts it. Then there'll be some offshoot deck that comes out that's like involving that thing. Mm-hmm. And then some piece from that offshoot deck will then come back to the original version. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, when people look back on it, that's the thing everybody plays now.
Right.
So like when Eldrazi Tron came out and a Walking Ballista became a four of, now Eldrazi Tron's like not really a deck anymore, but now regular Tron just plays three to four Ballistas in every single deck.
Right. Well, and something that like I find interesting, and Mono Green Tron, in fact, doing well here, I think are actually good representations of that, is the way Modern leans out, I would say like 40% of the field is playing something metagame. They're playing something new. They're playing something good that they've been working on. They're trying something out. And then the rest of the metagame is just playing the decks they always play. You know, like Tannen probably, and I don't know this for sure, but like plays Green Tron regularly. The guy who plays Infect has probably been trying to make Infect work since Infect was Infect.
Right. The SCG players are like that. SCG players are way, way more classic sports where like I have my move that I do and this is what gets me where I get.
Right.
Yeah, and like you and I have talked about this a lot, how like that's why you watch tennis. You watch because Sharapova has a great serve. Like,
right.
She does her power, and that's what you want to see.
And I've often said that tennis and Magic are like very comparable in the way like tournament structure ways, the way you watch players. But the thing about that is it means like modern tournaments are very interesting representations of metagames, because you'll have this kind of situation where it's like, oh, these six decks are like – Humans doing well and Dredge doing well are just like, this is what's good in the metagame right now. But then Mono Green Tron and Infect doing well means that like these decks are weirdly well positioned here by accident. Like Infect just like did well this weekend because all of the decks that are good this weekend happen to put it into a favorable position. It's why like Elves or Merfolk or Affinity will randomly just take down a GP, is because that weekend that deck was good because the metagame kind of lined up for it. And it's kind of a cool way to see like the outliers in top eights like this are the ones that I'm most interested in, because it's you're seeing a new way of how the format is shaping out.
100%. So that's the big results from over the weekend, guys. There was no Modern GP this last weekend, but we will keep our eyes open for other competitive stuff. You can expect to see a segment like this at the beginning of the show every week from now on. We want to make sure we're giving you guys the big results from the tournaments over the weekend. Other big news from over the weekend.
I will say, I do want to say the top five cards from the tournament, which were Noble Hierarch was number one. Nature's Claim, number two. Faithless Looting was number three. Phantasmal Image was number four. And Aether Vial was number five. And then just Dredge cards after that.
It's a lot of humans in those vials and images.
Yeah, and
Image is so good. Yeah. It's like one of my favorite cards.
And then Faithless Looting is like the key card out of Dredge. And it's good in decks that aren't Dredge. Nature's Claim is one of the best sideboards out of Dredge. And then but it's in other decks. And then Noble Hierarch is in humans. It's in
It's in Infect.
It's in
Banned Spirits. It's in
everything.
Yeah, that card's powerful.
Cool.
There was other news from over the weekend. I know that there was, we'll just briefly touch on this, but there was a scandal and a firing over at Star City Games. Which was, I read about it very, very briefly, but it sounds like there was some harassment going on internally, and that was a big story. So obviously, you know, on to bigger and better things for a company that doesn't want to be involved in a harassment scandal. So I don't think we'll name names. If you guys want to look up that story, feel free to look it up.
Sure.
So other than that, I think we should probably get into sweet decks that we have seen or want to talk about. Because the 16th place deck in this tournament is it Spells.
Yeah. Which, you know, let's all call it what it is. This is an Arclight Phoenix deck.
That's like the other big piece of news, actually.
Is that Arclight Phoenix went from $2. Yeah. I bought 32 copies at $1 because I was probably inebriated and saw that they were $1.
Let me clarify exactly what happened.
Okay.
Because we did the show and Alex was like, this is the new Vengevine. And I was like, yeah, this card's pretty good. And then we were in Dallas at Toy Fair and we had like a very long day one all setting up. And I was like, yeah, I think the card's pretty good. I think we should buy some copies. And Alex was like, I bought a bunch last night. So then I got on my phone. I bought 12 copies. And he's like, that's exactly how many I bought. Flash forward to Alex realizing that he was, in fact, drunk. He bought 40 copies. He got 40 copies at $1.50. I got mine at like $3.12, and it's like $18.
So I thought I bought 36. I bought 32. Four of them were Steamkin. I bought that at like three. I was just like, oh, this card's probably also a thing. And then I just went deep. I like love this card. I've been playing in every format I can. So finally, and the internet has been telling me how wrong I was. There was a thread that Michael Producer got involved in when I was in Hong Kong, which is why I wasn't here last week, defending the cast. But someone was like, you know, Arc Lake Phoenix is bad. Why am I wrong or whatever? I don't get it. And then everyone was like jumping on it. And then Michael was like, no, people are like, good players are talking about this card. Wait till people test with it. It's a free 3/2. It's not a 4-mana card. And then bam, the internet took over Storm.
So let's talk about this card for a second, because it's cool to see. It's always cool to see when a mythic from a set that you like shoots up, because it makes you feel like you're right.
Yeah.
Like, that's great.
I love that feeling. More than any other feeling in my life.
Yeah. It's a great feeling. You love to be right. I understand that. And this card is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I think this card is going to make a pretty real impact in Standard. It doesn't have legs quite as far in Standard.
I think it's doing fine in Standard, and Michael will shout out right now saying that he's playing it in Standard. But I think that the thing, and we have like four lists here of Modern lists playing the Phoenix. And the one that's important is at the SEG event, the 16th place deck was, who's the player? I'm never going to pronounce it. M-O-U-G-H-O-N. Mogan?
Mogan? I don't know.
Okay.
Everett,
I'm sorry that I'm
we
Everett.
We apologize for your name.
Everett is his first name. It's not Everett. It's E-V-A-R-T. Everett.
Jeff, my wife is great, but remember that time I specced an Arc Light Phoenix?
But Bedlam Reveler and Arc Lake Phoenix and Thing of the Ice and Jace Fringe Prodigy are all like cards that definitely make sense together, and then just a bunch of really good spells.
I think this card is great. I think in Modern it is definitely legit. I think that's no question about that. I think it's a weird card because,
well, there's weird keys to it. One of them is that it comes in at beginning of combat,
right? So so it has a different trigger step than a lot of the Phoenixes ever have,
or like more specifically Vengevine. So the most comparable cards I think are this and Vengevine. This one, you know, you play good spells and you get a good card out of it. Vengevine, you play bad spells and you get a good card out of it. But the other thing is that the problem with Vengevine was always the cards you play are things that get stuff into your graveyard. Like you play the new creature, the one drop black one that makes three cards go in your graveyard, but the Stitcher Supplier. But the moment you get the second one into play, or the moment you cast it, it's not even ETB, the Vengevines come back, and then that's it.
Right.
You have to cast two more creatures to get any additional Vengevines you might get back into your graveyard. This, you can cast 30 spells before you actually get to your attack step, and then if you happen to accomplish your goal, any Phoenixes you put into your graveyard come into play before combat.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, because it's one of these cards where you are rewarded, like Vengevine, you're rewarded for a 60-card format with a density of strategy versus, like,
correct,
playing this in a format like Commander or Highlander where it's just not going to have the impact. It's a cool card, but you can't do it. And in Standard, like, you're so specific. But in Modern, it's just right because the power level is not Legacy level. So it's, like, Legacy can do great things. Modern is perfect for this card. It's just right.
I think this card's probably really good in Legacy. I mean, like, the thing that benefits this card, I mean, and I'm willing to be proven wrong there because my understanding of Legacy is limited, but the thing that benefits this card and does well, Legacy does so much better. Like, manipulating the top of your deck, casting a bunch of spells in one turn, a bunch of one-drop card manipulation spells, this card.
Yes, I agree. What I mean when I say this is Legacy's faster, Dredge is faster, Legacy Dredge is faster. You can do that, and you will not be able to get to the point of combat where you're attacking and winning with this card. You'll just die, and you won't have Force of Will. Whereas in Modern, you can, and the fastest decks against you in Modern are not fast enough to get around this, and they can't interact with you in a way that's totally unfair.
Well, so this isn't a speed thing. That's the thing that I think people kind of took into this card originally, and some of the decks out there are trying to be as fast as possible. What this card does is it closes out the game. You're playing a spell, Thing in the Ice, you know, trying to stop your opponent from doing stuff, you know, getting advantage, and playing a Bedlam Reveler to get like a big threat in the play and start kind of being down, and then on turn five, you happen to swing for 9 damage in the air at haste that they can't stop. Like, it's not a, so I'm going to kill you immediately.
Let's break
it's,
down Everett's list, because this is the 16th place list.
Right.
So you have 4 Arclight Phoenix, 4 Bedlam Reveler, 4 Thing in the Ice, 2 Jace Friends Prodigy. So all cards that have seen modern play other than Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
The sick card over here in the spell slot is you have 4 copies of Fiery Temper, which
yes.
I know every single person that has ever played a deck that involves the graveyard has wanted to make this card work. Mm-hmm.
And you've been seeing a lot of this, because also there's the card that I did not win on, Fiery Temper, that's this card, 3 mana
Risk Factor,
the one I was right about.
Yeah, congratulations, you were right.
You bought 32 copies, I bought 0, you were right.
Well, I don't think, Risk Factor is also a rare, like the reason I bought the Phoenix is I was like, this is a low, like 32 copies literally cost me $30.
I'm just saying you doubled down on what you were right about because you bought 30 copies and I was like, Risk Factor's good, I think you won the battle.
Well, but I don't think Risk Factor is ever going to be over $4, maybe 10 at most, and that's if it's the most played. Like, I don't think that's happening.
It's symbolic. Why are you arguing about being right? You already are right. Stop arguing to make me wrong about you being right. So, Fiery Temper, sweet. Is it Charm? The like redheaded stepchild of decks like this in Modern that always is the card and then eventually gets subbed out for not the card you want.
I don't think it will here though.
You think it's perfect?
Well, I think like. The draw 2, discard 2, and is a spell is like super relevant.
Yeah, well, because it's just another it's Faithless Looting plus other things, and Faithless Looting is the best card in the whole deck for what you're trying to do.
But I think this is better than like the only other card I can think of that would really play over this is something like Cathartic Reunion, and this is just better than Cathartic Reunion and what this deck is trying to do, because it does do the things you need of killing creatures, countering spells, like stuff that you would want to be doing. But then also when you're ready to go off or ready to just like, oh, I've been whittling you down with my, you know, Bedlam Revelers and like whatever I got off with Thing of the Ice. And then you can just cast this and get your Phoenixes in.
One of the most interesting things about this, though, is that this is proof to your point right now. It's playing 4 copies of Visit Charm, but only 2 copies of Thought Scout.
Yeah.
That's kind of fascinating because like if you were to ask me like in a vacuum in a blue-red spells deck that's there's no question that I would say play more Izzet Charms than Thought Scours. Thought Scours would be one of the first cards I put in the list. Mm-hmm. And I actually think...
My guess it was the first. I think it was probably the second card after Faithless Looting.
I think that after this deck gets played, I think it's going to be more Thought Scours.
I've been messing around with the blue-red spells list on my phone, and I have Thought Scour in there. It is a little lower impact than I want. And we'll see. Like, we'll see how kind of the format shapes out. It definitely feels like just the Izzet Charm is giving this deck interaction that it doesn't really have on any other card. Like, it has Lightning Bolt, Izzet Charm, and Fiery Temper, but it has no other way to stop your opponent from doing anything.
Did you just say Fiery Temper?
Fiery. Fiery. Whatever. Okay.
You're my favorite person in the world.
I'm glad. That makes me happy. I'll take that. I'll take saying things wrong.
It's because the best part is that you say it on cards you've said right in the past. It's like something about you see the letters and you just decide that you're going to say like Sage. Even though you said Siege correctly, mm-hmm. you go back to Sage.
Mm-hmm.
You just called it Fiery Temper 5 minutes ago.
I can't control the way my mouth works. This is what happens.
All right, moving on from making fun of you. It is notable that in the sideboard of this list, by the way, it's playing 2 copies of Alpine Moon, which like has been really bad, hasn't it? Haven't people struggled to make Alpine Moon work, or have I been missing it? It's, like, literally bad.
I don't think it's bad. It's just a sideboard card. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's just, like, in the way that people were like, yeah, Damping Sphere is not as good as you think. People are still playing it. Alpine Moon was the same thing. I thought no one was playing it.
I guess my point when I say, like, it's a sideboard card, one person's playing it. It's 1 mana.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I also just think, like, sideboard cards take a while. You need the right deck. A deck needs to try it out. Like, oh, this works exactly what I need it to. And also, this is the exact deck that wants Alpine Moon, because it needs something that's just going to slow Tron down for 2 turns so you can get a big swing in on turn 4 versus them winning on turn 3.
Quickly, before just as we finish out, you know, that deck, before we get into our brews here,
yeah.
I do want to talk about the fact that Bant Spirits has become such a thing. Because mm-hmm. there's 3 more copies in the next, like, 10 decks here.
Right, it just didn't top 8. It, like, made it, but not top 8-ing.
And this is playing a lot of the cards that we would expect. Like, it's ever since the printing of Supreme Phantom, this has just become, like, the Flying Flash Humans version. It's, like, somewhere in between, like, what Humans is doing, what Fairies used to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, kind of what this deck is. And I think people were looking for a way to combine the power, obviously, of Spellqueller with something that was going to make this deck, like, a little faster. And so mm-hmm. Supreme Phantom gets you there.
Where was this SCG event?
This was Dallas.
Dallas. Why is it? Okay. Because I'm looking at... Sorry. Keep going with Spirits.
I was like... If I was to ask you a year and a half ago, before the printing of Spellqueller and mm-hmm. before the printing of this card, Supreme Phantom, if I was to say, if a modern spirits deck ever becomes tier one, will it play Lingering Souls, yes or no? What would your answer have been?
Yes, it would.
100%. Yeah, right? Yeah. There'd be zero question in your mind that if there was going to be a spirits deck in modern, it would have to play Lingering Souls.
Sure.
Because that card is so good. Mm-hmm. And if you're playing any deck that's going to take advantage of
having
multiple spirits.
And black has been a classic spirits color, so it wouldn't be surprising. Yeah.
It's right. Shocking to me that Bant, of all things, I guess, a blue-green deck in modern is the tier one spirits deck.
I guess Collected Company does... I guess, like, if the question was, will a deck that's playing spirits play black-white? And I'm like, how involved is Collected Company? Because, you know, we've basically been in a situation where if you're a tribal deck and you have any access to green, you're playing Collected Company. And
yeah, I mean, Coco is really powerful.
Yeah, but even Merfolk doesn't do that. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, but anyway, that's...
But speaking of on the Collected Company trend...
Go ahead. Yeah.
Because before we get into the brews, I do want to bring this up. There is one deck in this top... He placed 22nd place, top 24. keep moving the goalpost. That's playing Knight of the Autumn in the main. And it's a Bant Company deck.
Sweet.
And it's dope. It's Birds, Nova Hierarch, Voice of Resurgence, Corsair of Crucifix, Geist of St. Traft, Knight of the Autumn as a 2-of, Nether Reliquary, Reflector Mage, Renegade Rallier, Spell Queller, and Tyler Tracker. Just like Bant. Plays one Dromoka command. Haven't seen that in a while. And four Collected Company.
Sick. Alex is aware that it's not called Knight of the Autumn. He's doing it for comic effect. So
yeah,
just pointing that out for the comments to not rip us apart. This deck is sweet. Plays tons of good cards. Ready yep. Rallier. I ordered like all the stuff recently that like all this like alpha and beta stuff that I was trying to get for investment.
Okay.
And one of the orders, somebody was like, they packaged it with I think the foil FNM Knight of the Autumn. No. No, damn you.
Yes. Yes.
You're accepting my brain.
I've won. Everyone just realized that I won.
That foil, it's not even Knight of Autumn. It's actually, I'm trying to say Renegade Rallier. He put the foil Renegade Rallier in as like a thank you for buying from me, which is so cool.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
love when people do that because I don't think it's worth very much. I think it's like a dollar or two maybe.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But it's so nice when people do stuff like that when you order. It's like literally giving you a $1 discount, but you feel so cool getting a sweet foil.
Right, right.
I have to tell you, there's probably few things in Magic that I like more. Than
free stuff?
No, than weird...
foils?
Yeah, like non-traditional foils, right? Like promo foils, FNM foils, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even matter if the card's like a dollar. I don't even care. I just
sure.
like it. It's like,
sure.
you know? Anyway, let's talk about Bruce. So, do you want to start or should I?
You start. I'm looking at some of the brews that people have submitted through the chat and looking for ones that have Guilds of Ravnica cards.
Cool.
None of them have Guilds of Ravnica
cards.
I'm
going to jump in first. Well, okay. So actually, because we're on an Arclight Phoenix train.
You want to talk about your brew with Arclight Phoenix?
I don't actually think it's that good. I think it's fine. I just want to talk about it because it's a continuation of another deck that I had done.
Sure.
Dredgelite
Phoenix?
Yeah, exactly. I talked about it on the show at one point, and so I feel like probably it's worth talking about here. It was called
Pyro Well, while you're looking up, I do. So they have a Ponza deck here that got 10th place.
Saw that, yeah.
But they call it Gruul Land Destruction. Where do you sit on the Ponza versus Gruul Land Destruction
Why
train?
Why was it called Ponza in the first place?
It's like what the original Land Destruction deck from back in the day is called. So you're against Ponza, it sounds like, because you don't even understand.
Well, like, so there's those deck names that come from somewhere, like back when, like, Solar
Flare. Like Cheerios.
Yeah, Cheerios, Solar Flare. Yeah. Like, these decks where you're like, somebody comes up with the name of it because of, like, a character on a card looks like something
sure.
or something. And then that becomes what the deck is. And if you come into the format later, or the deck comes back mm-hmm. 2 years later, you have no idea why the deck is called that. Ponza? Is it something with like here's what I think of. Ponzu sauce, which I love.
I do love Ponzu sauce.
Ponzi schemes, which Bernie Madoff went to prison for.
Sure.
What the hell
Very
is Ponza?
Very specific reference.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd actually, chat, do you know what Ponza is?
It's named after the pizza place that the creator frequented, says someone in the chat.
There you go.
That's what Kevin Ash says. Thanks, okay. Kevin.
I believe that.
Thanks, Kevin Ash. I think it should be called something else. I don't know if it should be called Green Red Land Destruction, but it should be called something else.
So I guess my point is that if the community is calling something something, for whatever reason, does that name hold value over a generic name that, for instance, there could be 12 different versions of Gruul. And like, for instance, the Izzet Spells deck, I think, is a bad name for the Arc Lake Phoenix deck.
Oh, because it's like so generic, and that you could call any deck with that's Izzet colors or spells that.
Right.
So you
and should, like yeah. the difference between this deck versus Michael showed me a list earlier, and he's going to tell me who made it. That was a Kiln Fiend deck, and yeah. there is the deck you're about to like. There's different versions of Izzet Spells, and there's like Delver decks, and so Izzet Spells seems so generic and doesn't tell me anything about what I'm looking at.
You can call Storm Izzet Spells.
Right. Exactly that.
I mean, that original Ponza deck from way back in the day. Well, my point is that original deck should be called Ponza because that guy went to the pizza place and called that deck Ponza. This mm-hmm. deck isn't Ponza. Whoever came up with this deck should call it something else because then this deck can have its own identity. We called your deck Kessel Run.
Well, I think
if I had done well with that deck, I would hope that it was called Kessel Run.
I think the reason that they're similar is that that deck also basically was based off of a Utopia Sprawl-like card and then Stone Rain and Molten Rain. Like, it's those three cards were the key of the deck, and then everything else is just big red-green creatures. Yep. But yeah, okay, fair.
So
fair
let
enough.
Me share this deck really quickly. This is not a deck that I think is awesome. I think it's cool. I haven't played games with it yet. It's just on my phone. But this is a continuation of the deck that I built a while back and took to whatever the GP that I played in the trios with Ryan Sconard and Eric Weidetz was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this was the Life in the Loam Flame Jab deck with all of the, you know, Thermo Alchemists and such. And so I had talked about bringing that deck back because I think the printing of Electrostatic Field is pretty cool for this. It being a 0/4 is, I think, a little more relevant than being a 0/3. Doesn't die to Lightning Bolt. So I tried to go back to this deck and make it with Electrostatic Field and Arclight Phoenix. What I found was black didn't serve the purpose that it used to, and so I ended up building a deck with 4 Electrostatic Field, 1 red, 1 colorless for a 0/4 defender wall. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. 4 copies of Arclight Phoenix, 4 Bedlam Reveler, because it's going to help me, you know, dump and refuel just mm-hmm. like the other decks do, and then tons of cool spells. So 4 Looting, 4 Bolt, 4 Visions, 4 Thought Scour. The only green card in the deck, in the main deck, is 4 Life from the Loam. And then I'm playing 4 copies of Flame Jab, and the last card, which I think is spicy, is 4 copies of Pondrify. So you guys know that I love Pondrify. 1 blue, instant planar chaos, destroy target creature. That creature's controller puts a 3/3 green ape creature token into play. A couple reasons it's in here. Obviously, destroying one of their creatures, you have a 0/4 wall and a 3/4 Bedlam Reveler on the battlefield, so you don't really care about giving them a 3-power creature very much.
Sure.
Secondly, you can destroy your own Arclight Phoenix with it, get yourself a 3/3. It counts as one of the 3 spells necessary to get the Phoenix back. And then you play 2 more spells, you get Phoenix back, it attacks, and you're left with a 3/3. So I think Pondrify, I personally think Pondrify and its later reprinting of Rapid Hybridization are kind of underplayed cards. I think they're really interesting cards. There's not that many spells for 1 mana at instant speed that say destroy target creature.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, and giving them a 3/3 is not nothing, but there aren't that many.
And the fact that your 2 main threats being Arclight Phoenix and Bedlam Reveler
play well with it.
Now, I think now that we've seen Arclight Phoenix decks kind of succeed and some of them doing well, I think that you want to really look at the deck that's just doing well. Because I think the core idea of Life in the Loam and Retrace and yeah. Arclight Phoenix and Bedlam Reveler all doing really well together is a strong concept. I think the idea of a random 0/4 wall that just pings them when you could do something like, I think honestly a Thing of the Ice in that slot is not a bad idea, or something else that takes what you're doing and benefits off of it in the same way
is
other cards
are
doing.
Is Thing of the Ice 0/4?
Yeah.
So then it plays well with Ponder.
Right.
So that might just be better.
Yeah.
It'd be dead right. That could be the one card that needs to swap out. Because I think like Loam with Flame Jab in a deck like this with Phoenix as a threat is pretty good.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I like the core idea of Loam, Arclight Phoenix, Flame Jab, Bedlam Reveler. It like gives you basically like a second Arclight Phoenix. It gives you a second thing. Like, and I've seen other people play in Mardu lists with Lingering Souls because you need more than one thing to kind of take advantage of from the graveyard.
Yeah.
And that does that. It gives you a little bit of a long game plan, and it guarantees getting Arclight Phoenixes basically after turn 5.
Isn't Reveler with Loam just insane? Because of the way it works, you can discard Loam to it and then
draw one
and then dredge it back as one of the cards. 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think your deck is doing a lot of really powerful things. It's just how do you take advantage of it to the greatest extent? And which cards are you playing that could be better cards?
So that's my first brew. I haven't actually played games with it, but I think it's pretty fun. And
can your dome? Yeah, I was able to read it.
That's Jeff Roberts.
Mentioned Soul Scar Mage in the board as an additional out to large creatures.
I like Soul Scar Mage a lot. I think that card is great
because it lets you erase stuff with your retrace.
Yeah, because it. Soulscar Mage is one red, I believe, for a 1/2 with all damage, non-creature damage you control has wither, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
Right? So if
if you have a direct damage spell, it does a -1/-1 counter.
So a Lightning Bolt is -3/-3 to a creature permanently. And it also has prowess, so it gets bigger.
Well, it's really good with the retrace spell.
Flame Jab,
just lets you go.
It's particularly insane. I mean, the only problem with the whole Flame Jab.
It also has something. It gets bigger. It has prowess. Yeah, yeah.
The only issue with the whole like Flame Jab loam engine, and I found this before, is that you're very disruptible to graveyard hate, and B, it's not doing enough with the rest of the deck that's going to control the game all the way.
That's why I'm saying something like a Thing in the Ice where you permanently will basically wipe their board. And like one of the negatives of Thing in the Ice is it bounces your stuff too, I believe. And with Arclight Phoenix and Bedlam Reveler, that's actually a strength, not a negative. And you end up being fast with it. So you have a threat in play that's not like, oh, I need to keep retracing stuff. Once you flip it, you now have a 7/8 that's just going to get in there and start doing damage.
It's possible Young Pyromancer is the better card in that slot instead of Thing in the Ice.
So I've heard that Young Pyromancer is bad right now.
Interesting.
Like I cannot prove that as true, but I've heard that, and I think as a sideboard card, switching those out for each other, or just putting Young Pyromancer in instead of other parts of your deck, if you want to become less graveyard centric, isn't a bad idea. But I've heard that those 1/1 tokens aren't that beneficial in this format. Where like,
one of the things I like about it is that your Pondrify targeting one of the 1/1s makes another 1/1 and a 3/3. So it's another way to take advantage of your Pondrify in a I'm going to crack back with more damage than you can handle kind of way.
Yeah, I think the issue is more that just like things on the ground don't do anything. Like a bunch of – you're a deck that's trying to do big swings and do a bunch of damage to them, and that's a card that wants you to kind of be a slow grindy deck that slowly kills them.
Actually, now that I think about it – again, I think we're going to move on from this idea because I don't know if it's any good. But don't you think that actually that's really good? Doesn't it mean just Pondrify is just a 1-mana 4 power instant end of turn? Do you have a Pyromancer?
And maybe the answer is just play both. Like you play something that has some Young Pyromancers. Like I think you need more threats in this deck anyways. That isn't a 0/4 wall that does 1 damage every turn.
So, other than that, let's move on to our next brew.
Yeah, next brew. Is you? You have all the brews.
Oh, okay. I do. I have one from.
You want to just keep talking about Arclight Phoenix decks.
No, I mean that deck is sweet. The other brew that I want to talk about here, it's another blue-red deck. This one is from Brian R. Brian is the host of the MTG Cold Brew podcast, in which he takes a card that he thinks is bad or the world thinks is bad and tries to brew and talk about it on the show. And, he's a friend of the show. I got to meet him and hang out with him at GP Texas, sure. San Antonio, last year the team won. And so he sent this list to me this morning on Twitter, and I think it's really cool. The heart of the deck is that it's playing 4 Pyromancer Ascension and 4 the Flame of Keld. Most of you guys are probably pretty familiar with Pyromancer Ascension. It's the one that once you get a certain number of counters on it, it copies your spells that are in your graveyard. Flame of Keld, on the other hand, is a saga. It's 1 red, 1 colorless. It's an uncommon. And the first ability is discard your hand. The second ability is draw 2 cards. And once the third ability hits, it says if a red source would deal damage to a permanent or player this turn, deals that much damage +2 to that player or permanent instead. To go alongside that, you are playing 18 lands, just a straight blue-red simple mana base, 4 Ancestral Vision, 4 Faithless Looting, 4 Lava Spike, 1 Flame Jab, 4 Gut Shot, 1 Is It Charm, 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Metamorphose, 4 Thought Scour, and finally, the Guild of Ravnica card, 4 Mission Briefing. It's the Surveil 2,
yeah.
And then you get a Snapcaster effect out of your graveyard. This deck is all spells, and it's so turbo. Like, I think the turn one Ancestral Vision, turn two either a Pyromancer Ascension or Flame of Keld is probably your ideal setup to win on turn 4.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think this takes advantage of Mission Briefing in a way that's really interesting because, like, this is the type of deck that you want to be able to cast spells multiple times. And, like, Mission Briefing, both A, can target itself, so you get that trigger off of it, but B, lets you kind of on turn four, any one drop you have, you get two casts off of it, which is good.
To actually clarify that, your Ancestral is not going to come off till turn five, so you actually wouldn't win the game on turn four. It's probably setting up a turn five win, but that just refills, or you wouldn't.
Well, but you need... So, like, you want really your turn three and turn four to turn... Pyromancer Ascension on.
Yes.
So your turn five is normally in those types of deck when you win anyway. Storm it was the same way. I'm excited.
Yeah, because I guess Flame of Keld you don't want to play on turn two because then you're discarding your hand on turn three.
Yeah.
That seems bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you play a little later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, you want to get Pyromancer Ascension down as soon as you can, and then everything else is kind of playing on that game plan. I like the deck. I think Pyromancer Ascension has always been a powerful card since Gitaxian Probe was banned. It's kind of fallen out a little bit of a favor.
Yeah.
And definitely not played in Storm. It's been replaced by Varal, basically. But the long term of it in the format is always going to be powerful. I remember back when it was in Standard, there was the Time Walk decks that you would take basically infinite turns by and kill them with lightning bolts because you would just be able to take like six turns in a row off
that
of...
That was in Standard?
That was a Standard deck, yeah.
Because there was multiple extra turn cards?
There was the five mana one, and it just was good enough.
Oh, yeah. Time Warp.
Yeah, Time Warp.
Yeah. Interesting. So that's the second deck here. Do you have any other cool brews you want to talk about?
There are other decks that people brought on, but kind of they don't have any RGR cards. So
RGR.
GRN.
GRN. There you go.
See?
Return to Guild of Ravnica.
Yeah. Set number four. We're gonna come back.
What's the next set called again?
The Nets.
Ravnica Alliance.
Ravnica Alliance.
Ravnica Alliance.
They really messed up everything.
Allegiance. Oh, Alex did. Ravnica Allegiance.
Oh, my God.
Ravnica Allegiance. We're saying that in the microphone in case you didn't hear it, people on the microphone. But
if you spend time with Alex, you become more successful and more dyslexic, both at the same time.
It's my main move, along with this thing, which apparently is my main move in life.
The robot move.
The robot move. It's really annoying that it's G. So for those who don't know, the original Ravnica set was the first set started with an R, the second set started with a G, the third set started with an N. The first set started with an R, second set started with a D, not N.
Did you realize this? Tempest of Thought is telling us Thing in the Ice doesn't bounce Bedlam Revelr because it's a horror. I didn't realize that. I thought you were getting value out of Revelr by replaying it again.
No, that's better. I would rather not play it again and keep it in play.
That's so
good. It's non-horror cards. That's such a random tribal interaction.
Hunted horror anymore?
I love random tribal interactions where people like have trinket text, but then it's relevant. In Standard when Baneslayer Angel was the first time around and you were like, I can like defeat it with this other bit. Nope, it's a dragon.
So is there a version of this that could be playing?
Halo Hunter versus Baneslayer Angel.
Yeah.
Is there a version of this that could be playing Hunted Horror alongside it?
Sure.
Right? Sick? With like Vapor Snags to get rid of the token?
Like Thing in the Ice in that, maybe. I don't think Hunted Horror belongs in an Arc Lake Phoenix.
Oh my god, wait, that's so... It bounces all other creatures.
But horrors.
So it doesn't bounce the horror, but it bounces the tokens you give them?
Correct.
That's a real thing. I'm not kidding anymore.
Hunted Horror alongside Thing in the Ice
and Bedlam Reveler, you're getting a 7-7 for two. So then you, like, turn three. I guess you don't have any free spells to just, like, get rid of the 3/3s right away. But the 3/3s then get blocked by your 3/4 Bedlam Reveler and your Thing in the Ice.
Yeah.
That's so good.
There's got to be a tribal bounce card. I know the new one is that, but it's X, which doesn't work here. There's not, like, a choose a tribe or choose something all with the same name. You bounce all of them. There's
Echoing Truth.
Yeah, Echoing Truth. You can play Echoing Truth.
I've played Echoing Truth in the past in the Hunted Horror decks. No, this is, like, a legitimate on-the-show thing I just realized. If you actually can play those three cards
and Pondrify,
because it makes a 3/3 and everything in your deck can block a 3/3 favorably, you don't care. And your Thing in the Ice bounces all the tokens, but none of your creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if you need Arclight Phoenix in this deck. This deck might just
No, this isn't an Arclight Phoenix deck. This is a deck that is doing a thing. I don't know how good of a thing.
Grixis Horrors?
Yeah.
This is so sick.
You could get away with like a Cavern of Soul if you wanted to.
I can't tell if Michael's smile over there is that he thinks this is absurd or if he's excited. This is the deck. This is the deck I'm building.
I think he's excited because this is the magic of this podcast, is you realizing that these three cards that are semi-okay are okay together.
This is so exciting. And, like, obviously Faithless Looting. Like, you maybe play Claim Fame in this deck because why not? Because it's Grixis and awesome.
You
can put your horror into play from the graveyard.
Oh, Hunted Horror is a two-drop. Okay.
And you can put your Thing in the Ice back in. You can't get your Bedlam Reveler back, but you
can give it +3/+0 in haste. Yeah.
+2/+0 in haste, I think.
Yeah.
There you go. Jeff Roberts is in. Let the brewing begin. Yes, Modern Horror Tribal.
plus two and zero, it's behind me.
Yeah, that's right. There's a giant version behind us.
Yeah, cool.
Strong. Yeah, that's my next deck. Great. I just built it.
We've talked about two of the cards behind us.
Night of the Autumn.
I like almost talked about the green-blue merfolk when we were talking about collect company merfolk. Not a thing.
I have to tell you that green-blue merfolk...
Disappointing.
It is.
Yeah. Going into green is not good enough.
So this will be my Highlander corner, because I actually won a foil Night of Autumn over the weekend. We do these Highlander roulette tournaments. It's like 100 cards.
Is that a new segment we're starting? Highlander corner? I feel like we can have a better name than corner.
Okay.
That's Highlander related.
You think about it and I'll talk about it.
Okay.
We played in this tournament and it's 6 decks, 100 cards, random, one card per. You can't play more than one copy between your 600 and only foils are legal. Anyway, every single one has like basically a themed set of prizes. Mm-hmm. So this time it was foils from Guilds of Ravnica. Mm-hmm. So first place was foil Assassin's Trophy, then Doom Whisperer. I got third, and I took a foil Knight of Autumn. I probably could have taken Aurelia. Mm-hmm. The red-white card was actually probably the third pick, but I know I'll play this. But anyway, that was a lot of fun. And one of the decks I play is, it sounds horrible. Are you proud of yourself?
That was Ben.
No, that was Michael. and I've had this, like, I had this mono blue merfolk deck that was playing all the bad free counterspells for a long time. It was, like, super fun. It played Thwart. It played Foil. It played, obviously, Daze and Force. It played Misdirection. I mean, I literally tried to play every free card I could. Currently, it's playing Snapback. I even considered Tidal War at one point. This is every bad return an island or like pitch a card to do something effect I could come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to win a lot.
The Merfolk deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I made it blue-green at one point because I could accommodate blue-green because I didn't have any other blue-green decks. Mm-hmm. Mistbinder was the card that I was like, this. I get another two-mana Lord.
Mm-hmm. Were you playing Collected Company in another deck at that point anyways?
No. So it's good in the company, deck. Yeah. I got the new Branchwalker. Sure. Right? I even tried Jaylight Ranger even though I think going double green's a little hard. And the deck is so much worse. The power is so much higher, but the deck is so much worse, and I can't figure out why. And I have to tell you, the difference in Island Walk and no Island Walk on Mistbinder is so significant when you're trying to push.
Sure.
It's crazy. I can't believe how disappointing that card is. Like, I would never have expected. And in the end...
I'm disappointed in it like a father is disappointed in his child.
And don't you agree that in Modern, in the end, the blue-green decks just weren't as good?
Well, Merfolk like hasn't been a thing since then, so I don't know if it's the blue-green issue or if just Merfolk is badly positioned in this format and Humans is a better version of it. Yeah. Highlander Hideout.
Wait. Jeff Roberts says, boys, you really need to check out some of the interactions in the list I sent. I've got a 4-0 with it 2 weeks straight. It's super sweet. Can we look at Jeff Roberts' list really quickly before we wrap up?
Jeff Roberts, can you tell me what the list's title is so that I know which one I'm looking at? Because I'm looking at like 4 different lists and none of them have people's
Alex
names on them.
It up,
But you didn't react to my name for the segment.
What was it?
The Highlander Hideout.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
100%.
I would be really happy about that.
The Highlander Hideout.
And then Michael like just dropped pun game on us and I got distracted.
we've just left the Highlander Hideout. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, we just left the Highlander Hideout.
Quickly before...
In a treehouse.
Quickly before Alex
that apparently does not exist because
Jeff's list, we're going to do a couple of shout outs. The first one is that we have a Patreon, patreon.com/themmcast. That is how we continue to expand the show. We would love to continue doing more cool things, and that's how we're going to do them. The camera that we are recording on, that you guys are seeing us on, it's because of the Patreon, and we need to be able to continue upping the show because with our schedules, it's been difficult for us to be here and accommodate all the expansions that we want. So please, guys, help us out. patreon.com/themmcast would be awesome. Other than that, we already talked about Twitter. We already talked about YouTube. There is Jimmy and Josh, our buddies. They started a show called The Command Zone.
And now Josh is...
a show called Game Nights.
And Josh is now the herald of that.
Yes. Jimmy is off in the world gallivanting.
Is a Mulan character.
Yeah, he's in Mulan. And check them out, though.
Also ripped. Actually, both of them got really fit. They're, like, doing good.
Is Josh really fit?
Yeah.
He got jacked.
Yeah, he's got some guns.
Nice. Way to go, Josh.
Yeah. All right. So this is the deck from Candor Dome. It takes advantage of the card Core Tapper, which is a 2-drop artifact.
Oh, I know all about Core Tapper.
That is a 1/1. You can tap it to put a charge counter on target artifact, or you may sacrifice it to put 2 charge counters on target artifact.
First of all, I haven't even seen the list, but I'm in, Jeff.
It's playing Walking Ballista, playing 3 Glenelendra Archmage, 1 Tezzeret the Seeker, 2 War of Invention, another War of Invention deck. That's a card that I think people should pick up. It's playing 3 copies of the Artificer's War.
The Artificer's War?
Yeah, Antiquity's War. Look at the top. I can't read it. It's too far away.
Is this the one, the Antiquities War? This is the Tezzeret card.
Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You can reveal an artifact card from among them and put them into your hand. put the other on the bottom. So basically, look at the top five cards of your library, find an artifact, and then the bottom one is everything becomes a 5/5 and attacks.
Yeah, this is a it's like a 4-mana. It's a 4-mana saga that's basically a combination of Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, and Tezzeret the Seeker.
Yeah,
like does both things. That's sweet. This card is exactly. Power Conduit is the biggest power card. God,
it's playing Ancestral Cornucopia, Everflowing Chalice, Mox Opals, Surge Nodes, Surge Energy Chamber, Power Conduit, Ensnaring Bridge, Magister's Scepter, and Mimic Vat.
I have tried to build so many decks using the cards you're using here, Jeff. I can't even tell you the number of bad versions of this that I have in my phone that never got anywhere close to the genius that you just presented us with.
Got it. So it's got Magister's Scepter lets you take extra turns.
You perhaps should up the brightness on your computer.
I also like need glasses, but there we go. That helps a lot. Put a charge counter on target artifact. Put a plus one counter. It lets you put more charge counters. I'm trying to see how it kills people, though.
Ballista, right?
Oh, okay. And puts plus one counters with those. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's moving all your charge counters plus one counters to Ballista.
Yep, sweet. Got it.
This deck is awesome. This is like playing so many cards that I'm into.
And you can lock people up with Galandra.
Takes infinite turns, goes infinite with Mimic Vat plus Core Tapper. Okay, that makes sense. So you sack the Core Tapper, right? And you get to put a copy of it, and then you... That's how it works, and you get to untap the thing.
Something lets you untap with charge counters?
I don't know. The list is not in front of me. It's in front of you. But it sounds like there's some sort of plus one counter.
Just puts three counters on Magister's Scepter, and then you tap Magister's Scepter.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Got it. Because it has haste. So you tap it, sack it. Got it. Sweet.
And with Ensnaring Bridge and on your Ballista, you have six amount of control. Yeah, this looks really sweet, man. This looks really, really fun.
Cool. But zero Guilds of Ravnica cards.
He's playing both Power Conduit and Core Tapper in the same deck, and it's working. He doesn't need GRN. I'm in. I am so in.
You could have just like sneak in on the sideboard the like black white, the black blue ponder card.
I'd like you to know, Jeff, that I own a foil Core Tapper and a foil Power Conduit because I have tried this before and I got Discovery. So excited. What?
I remember what the card was called. It's Discovery.
Yeah. So.
You could have played that on the sideboard just to make us happy. Okay. It is playing cards from Dominaria, though.
Perfect. So, Jeff Roberts, that's going to wrap up Highlander Hideout and also our Brew segment. We're going to talk quickly before we wrap up here about winners and losers.
Winners and losers from Return to Gravnica.
Did you just say Return to Gravnica?
I did.
What's the matter with you, son?
Winners and losers so far. The winners, Arclight Phoenix, Creeping Chill, Night of Autumn, top three. Then after that, you get into... I said all those right. No, I said Night of Autumn. I said Night of Autumn. I didn't say Night of the Autumn. I read it correctly.
Today is your magnus opus of mispronunciation. I've never, ever seen you do it so well.
I have a headache. Okay, we're moving on. After that, I think those are the big three winners. Would you agree?
Night of Autumn.
Arclight Phoenix and Creeping Chill?
It seems that way. Definitely. Definitely Creeping Chill and Arclight Phoenix are the hot cards. Night of Autumn is like a winner in the sense that...
Well, I think Creeping Chill and Night of Autumn have actual placement. Arclight Phoenix got one top 16. Like, those other two are showing up in multiple decks in a top 8 plus multiple... I mean, Creeping Chill is the easiest, biggest winner of the entire set.
Creeping Chill is an awesome card because it makes a great deck better. Night of Autumn is a card that you knew was going to see play in sideboards because there's nothing that does what it's doing better. But Arclight Phoenix is the heart of a new deck, which is... It's like... You can build a deck because you have this card, and that to me is like why I would say that card to me feels like the biggest winner. It's also the card, it's a mythic that went from $2 to $17 in a couple days, so obviously it's very much on people's minds. You're going to see a lot of Arclight Phoenixes coming up here.
Next, my biggest disappointment.
Oh, damn it. I said Magnus Opus, and somebody just told me it's Magnum Opus.
Ha.
You're the bane of my...
biggest disappointment to me is actually Assassin's Trophy. It is showing up in sideboards or like you know there is some green black decks. I think part of that is just like the format is so hostile to green black decks right now that even having Assassin's Trophy isn't going to do a lot. It's like, I mean, Dredge is a bad matchup for Junt and or Junk, and the fact that it became the best deck in the format or if not the second best deck in the format is bad news for a deck trying to like Assassin's Trophy you.
So here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. I talked about this when we. So yeah, I agree. Assassin's Trophy has been the card that should have been the slam dunk. Like when we talk about Night of Autumn fitting into sideboards, Assassin's Trophy should be the three of or two of in every black green deck, like no question, and some four of. I talked about when we did the show, the review of that card, this like Leon and Arbiter kind of deck that takes advantage of people not playing enough basics and or not being able to search. So talk to me about this. What if you're basically playing Rock Hate Bears with four Arbiter, and what's the other best ability that doesn't allow them to search?
It's the Flyer, Mind Sensor, another preview card of the cast.
Yes. Four Mind Sensor, four Arbiter. You play like six Hand Disruption spells, a Rock mana base with no Fetch Lands because you don't want to run into your own thing.
So that's hard to do.
It's doable. I mean, it just you play less maybe. But you're playing four Assassin's Trophy.
You cannot play Fetch Lands. We went through this that one time. Fetch Lands and Leonard Arbiter cannot be in the same deck.
So you just, okay. I think
you'll just like, oh, I lose. And if you're a tournament, an oh, I lose for an entire day is like a big oh, I lose.
I still think you can probably do this deck, and you probably play Bird of Paradise on turn one, so you can get turn two Arbiter.
Okay.
But, or turn two Mind Sensor. But you're playing four Path, four Assassin's Trophy, four Ghost Quarter as in the spell slot.
I guess, like, I don't know if Assassin's Trophy really adds that much more to a deck that's already good with just Ghost Quarter and Path.
I mean, you just, like, think, like, humans has game against you at all.
That deck doesn't, like, need Assassin's Trophy. It's already okay.
Oh, like you're saying, like this is basically like a slightly worse version of
the
of
green
like
wire
Eldrazi Tron or Hate Bears decks.
Yeah. Like you adding, making your mana base so much worse that you will lose games multiple times in a tournament because your mana base is bad to get like four extra copies of Path.
Maybe. It seems interesting, but I'll build the horrors deck first.
I almost like the idea more of just like using those four cards to overrun how many basics they're running, just to like eventually they just don't have any basics left. Like just play Path, Ghost Quarter, and Assassin's Trophy in a classic junk deck, and this third time you activate one of those cards, they just won't have any more basics in their deck.
Maybe. I was thinking is rather than Loam, what I think I would do is I would play Ramunap Excavator, the 2/3 for three, the Crucible creature.
Sure.
And I would try to actually have him as a threat as you make it impossible for them to ever play a land again.
Right. Like
and
that's
Ghost
more
Quarter them out.
Like eventually you get rid of the basics in their deck and having the maximum of these cards lets you do that. That's more likely going to be good than a Leon and Arbiter version. Especially if you play Loam, because then you have fetches that you can go off with.
So those are the winners.
Those are the big winners and the one big disappointment to me. These are cards that I think we need to keep our eye on. Mission Briefing. You mentioned it earlier. I thought it's a little bit of a disappointment. I almost had it in the disappointment category, but also like half the world was not on board with it. It's not like Assassin's Trophy where every person on the internet was like, that card. Kind of like Knight of the Autumn is in that world. Like if Knight of the Autumn wasn't in multiple decks in the top eight this last weekend, it would be a disappointment, but it is, unlike Assassin's Trophy.
Yep.
Missions Briefing, everyone was kind of like you were on board of this card is not that good.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine.
Experimental Frenzy is another card.
I want Kyle Rosales in the chat here to know that when he tells me I love Pongify, I love you, Kyle.
Experimental Frenzy is something that's really exciting. I think like it's being seen a ton of play in Standard. A lot of people are talking about seeing play in Modern and Zoo decks. I've also seen Grixis lists. I've also seen lists that are playing out of the graveyard, so kind of Dredge-esque decks, so that being able to draw off the top of your deck is good enough to be able to do it. And then the cards that you put in your graveyard are better because you can access them. Nullhide Ferox has started seeing some sideboard play.
Yeah, a little bit.
Runaway Steamkin is a big one. I almost had this in the winner's list. Actually, every card I'm going to say from now on was in my winner's list, and I put it in the seems to be one day we'll see it list.
Right.
Things to look out for list. Runaway Steamkin is obviously kicking butt in Standard, and I think it's going to very quickly become a thing in Modern.
Yep.
Jerry
T
said it right. is list for Arclight Phoenix had Experimental Frenzy. He is. What did I say wrong? Arclight Phoenix.
No, the fact you said Jerry winked and snapped at me before you said his last name is amazing.
You're laughing from 5 minutes ago. Okay, so Runaway Steamkin, good there. Pell Collector, obviously another card that we talked about previously,
Really
is starting to see play in Zoo decks. Zoo, I think, is having a big comeback, or is set to have a big comeback.
Yep.
Discovery Dispersal is already started seeing play in both Gorya's Vengeance decks and Living End decks.
Yep.
And the fact that it's a Living End card that lets you kind of find the things you need without being able to, you don't cascade into it, is really good. And then the fact that it's a Ponder like card that lets you mill cards into your graveyard in Gorya's Vengeance decks is also really powerful.
Absolutely. Black gets access to card selection, which is
really good. Yeah. Just, you can play mono black with a semi mediocre preordain.
Exactly.
And then last and least. Risk factor.
Card's dope.
It ends up that this is a card type that if you have multiples of, it makes them the second and third and fourth get better, better, and better. And every single one of these you draw is two of them is really good.
I mean, it's just like, think about it for a second. Like, at the base level, you start with 20 life. In Modern, by the time you've played two of these, your opponent will very likely have paid four between a fetch, a shock, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which means if you play Risk Factor twice, you're forcing them to let you draw cards because they'll die otherwise.
Right. No, so, I get it now.
In terms of math, it's just like it is really good. The incidental value of having this card available to you, and the fact that it's an instant is so powerful.
Yeah.
Totally. I like this card a lot. I think it's very good.
Cool. That's it. That's the last of the segment.
That's the show. That'll wrap us up. So
make sure to check us out on Facebook. We have a Facebook group and a Facebook page. Make sure to keep an eye out for the live stream. So on Twitter or Facebook, that's when we post more about the live stream. Also, make sure to subscribe on YouTube if you're watching this video on YouTube right now. If you're watching the live stream right now or you're listening on the podcast, go to the YouTube channel, hit the subscribe button. Make sure to comment what card you're most excited to play with in Modern out of RGN. Make sure to also comment your favorite thing I've said wrong this episode. I would love to hear that.
I'd like to add something in really quickly, actually. It's a quick shout out, something I'd like to address. On the Facebook group, one of our fans, somebody pointed out that there was a Reddit thread discussing the content of the podcast recently. Alex and I read through it. And there's a lot of discussion on there about the nature of the show, what we talk about. Couple things to clarify. Alex and I have been doing the show for 4 years. We love Modern. We've always loved Modern. Neither of us has ever been somebody who's a pro. We don't travel to play on pro tours. We come up with Modern ideas. We talk about them. We call each other throughout the week, and we follow results. That's the way the show's always been, and we want to continue doing that. Now, in the old days, when we had more time, we brought a few more guests on. We'd like to bring more guests. It's a fun way for us to talk about what's going on in the world and bring on Magic pros. What I'd like to ask you guys who are listening to this, who are big fans of the show and have stuck around for a long time, comment. Leave your thoughts in the comments below. An iTunes review. Let us know that we're doing a good job and you like it. I'm all about constructive criticism because there was a lot of comments on that Facebook thread and on that Reddit thread that were really helpful. Like, actually really, really nice things to hear. People saying, this is what I like about the show. I used to like this. I'd like to see more of this. We pay attention to that stuff. It's very helpful for us to make sure the show is better. So, we want you guys to know that if you are hearing this and you've stuck around through the issues you've had, we are always working to get better at the show, and we want to continue getting better with the show. And we are listening, and we are watching. So, thank you for supporting us and getting us. We're going to be at episode 200 before we know it. We're around the corner. It's like a couple months away. And, we're trying to, do better and better as we go forward. And thanks for the support.
So, surprise brew. Someone actually sent one in that is like mostly cards from RGN, so I feel like we should mention it. It's a Eternal Abzan by Lurg. His Twitter handle is also Lurg, Armchair Robot.
Okay.
At Armchair Robot. It's playing 4 Glowspore Shaman, 4 Tarmogoyf, 4 Eternal Witness, 3 Knight of Autumn, 1 Plague Crafter, 3 Restoration Angel, 1 Shriek Maw, 2 Liliana of the Last Hope, 4 Thoughtseize, 2 Assassin's Trophy, 1 Collective Brutality, 3 Grapple with the Past. That's the put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard, then you may get a creature or land card from your graveyard to your hand. 2 Find Finality, that's the new hybrid rare Golgari card that's black-green hybrid for the first one, and then you get to put 2 cards from your graveyard into your hand, 2 creatures, and then the other one is a board wipe. -4/-4 to everything, but you also get to put 2 +1/+1 counters on...
Reading cards.
A single creature you control. It's sideways. I had to look at it. And then Aether Vial. So this is like all cards. This is, I think, right now there's 4, 7, 8, 10... 12 plus Overgrown Tomb, 15 cards from RGN.
Sick. And it's playing Glowspore Shaman, which I could be happier about.
Yes, I thought you'd be excited. That's why I wanted to make sure we got it. It does have a cool thing. Restoration Angel is really good with cards like Shriek Maw because you can kill a thing and then bounce it so it gets to stay around. So for 6 mana, you get to kill a thing and get a lot of evasion, 6 power of evasion. It's good. I like it.
Excellent.
Cool deck list.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for supporting. All the love in the world to Alex and his mispronunciation. It's one of my favorites on the show, and this was a highlight of the show today.
We're the only really podcast special in the world where a feature is that we don't say things correctly. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.